There we go. All right. Well, this is a word that applies to our church, and I believe also to individuals. But one of the visions of this church is to be a leader in the community. And I think that there's a couple of things that we can do to kind of usher that into being. So we cannot keep on doing the same things and expecting different results. It's Einstein called it, it was his definition of crazy. Oh, sorry, insanity. Yeah, thank you. Insanity is doing the same things and expecting different results. So change always starts with us. It always starts with us. And then it spills out onto everyone else from our overflow. So if we expect the church to change or America to change or the nation to change or the world to change, then it all starts with us. We have to start with ourselves. So Philippians 2, verse 3, and we're going old school today, so there's going to be no verses on the screen. So, no, I'm saying we're going old school because there's not going to be any verses on the screen. So, yeah. So if you guys want to look it up, I'll kind of read it and go through it. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. Yeah, that's right. I got to make you guys work just a little bit. You guys are getting a little too spoiled with the screens and all the computers and everything. Well, I say that as I'm using the computer, but... Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility, count others more significant than yourself. And this is one of the things that I wanted to speak about, is that if we want to reach people in the community, then we have to be better. And I'm not saying that, you know, we need to, you know, go through extreme lengths, but we need to be better. We need to start investing in people. And it's one of the things that I don't think that we really do enough of. Because there's many people in the church right now that I probably haven't had more than a 10-minute conversation with since I've been here in the past 13 years. And that's something that we need to change in ourselves. We need to be invested in people. And if we can't invest ourselves in the people around us, then we're not going to invest ourselves into others. And so when you invest in people, when you're invested, it's not as easy to criticize. So if you are invested in someone, you're not really going to criticize their thoughts or their actions or their ideas as much as if you are not invested in them. And another thing, and this is one of the awesome points about Pastor John, is we have to call out the destiny in others. We have to call it out of them. And that's one of the things Pastor John has done to me since I was 15 years old in this place, is he has consistently called the destiny out of my life. And when we do that, it's almost like we are prophesying what's to come. And so I really appreciate Pastor John for that, because he's done that for 13 years now. And he does it to everyone that I know, even my sister. You know, he's like, oh, well, you know, one day, you know, she'll be this. Or one day, you know, she'll get rid of this. And so he calls it out in everyone. And that's something that I believe that we need to do a lot also. And the third point is that we have to bridge the gaps between the church and the lost. And in today's society, with our church and the way that everything's set up, it's almost like our church is like this safe zone. And then there's, you know, enemy lines. And then it seems like we all get geared up and we go behind enemy lines and we have this, you know, this really cool event or outreach or whatever once or twice a year. And we bring a couple of people across the line to our safe zone. And I think that that's something that we need to change. Like, we need to take this place and we need to make it a safe zone behind enemy lines. We don't need to do an outreach. Our whole lives need to be consumed with outreach. Yeah, we are the outreach. And so we don't need to do these two-year deals where, like, you know, twice a year, you know, we come in and we're like, all right, well, we're going to go do this outreach and everything. It's something that should just come out of our souls, our spirits. And this is one of the things, like, I didn't get to hear Liz's message, but I got to read the notes from it. So it was, that was really awesome. But one of the things I saw in there that really stuck out to me is she said that, that God was saying to this church that he's carried us for 40 years. And that if we ask him, he'll carry us for another 40 years. And so I think that with that, one of the things that stood out is that there has to be an action from us behind that. I don't think it's just a ask and you shall receive type thing, but I think that we need to actively be working on ourselves, and we need to show God that we're prepared for him to carry us another 40 years. Yes. And another thing, my fourth point, is that we cannot be afraid to dream again. A lot of the people that I see in this community, and some of the people in this church, I feel like we've lost ourselves to a certain degree because we've given up on our dreams and the words that God's spoken over us. And so life has just beaten some of us down to the point in which our dreams and the words that God's spoken over us just doesn't matter anymore. When we get words, we have to fight for those words. It's like Paul Job said. Paul Job said that when you get a word, you have to contend for that word in prayer. You have to saturate that word in prayer to bring it into being. It's not just something that happens. It's an active thing. You have to actively bring that word into being. And so, yeah. So we have to grasp it, and we have to fight for it in prayer. And one of the things that the enemy tries to do is almost like tries to give us spiritual amnesia. And so it's like you hear the word and then all of a sudden it just doesn't mean anything to you. You throw it by the side and you never think of it again. And it also happens with who we are. We tend to forget who we are sometimes. And in certain situations and even long term, we kind of forget who we are. Like one of the cool things that that Danny said, me and Danny went to Hugo's one day for my birthday, and we got wings. And there was a girl there who was drunk, like belligerently drunk, and it was like probably noon or 1 p.m. And she said, "Can I have one of your wings?" to Danny as she's reaching to grab one of his wings. And so he's like, sure, you kind of already have it, but, you know, sure, you know, go ahead. And then, you know, she's drunk and she's talking to Danny and she's like, you know, I can't stand people who are fake and people who say they're Christians and then they come to the bar. And then she was like, but I'm a Christian. So the whole thing was completely, it was completely contradictory, the whole thing. And then Danny said one of the, probably the most profound things I've ever heard him say in the 13 years that I've been here. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? No. But Danny looked at her and he said, well, maybe when you're out here in the bar, you're not being who you truly are. But when you're in church, that's who you truly are. And I was like, wow, you know, that is one of those things that I did not expect from Danny in that situation. I was expecting more like, get your hands off my wings, get away from me, something like that. I was expecting something like that. And then he had this awesome comment. And she looked at him for a second. She kind of thought about it. She was like, I've never really thought of it like that before. And I was like, man, Daniel, you're the man. You're the man. And so that's what I'm talking about with spiritual amnesia. Sometimes we forget who we are ourselves. And so when we show up to church and we have this hope that crashes over us, like through worship, and I believe it happened today. But when we have that hope that crashes over us, it seems like we, all of a sudden, we remember who we are again. Even if it's for a brief point, and then we step out the doors, and it's like we forget who we are. And I think that's one of the things that the enemy really wants to do to us, is make us forget who we are. But we need to remember who we are, and in case you forget, you should read 2 Peter. That tells you exactly who you are. The royal priesthood. That's who you are. You're a royal priesthood. Regardless of your faults, that's who you are. All right, so 1 Kings 17, and this is an example of kind of spiritual amnesia. If you guys haven't read 1 Kings or Kings in general, awesome stories. some of the best stories in the Bible, in my opinion. So we have Elijah, and I'm just going to kind of give you guys the Cliff Notes version of this whole thing. But we have Elijah, and he kind of comes on the scene. The first thing he does is predicts a drought, and then the drought happens. So that in itself is, I haven't heard a prophet in the United States predict a drought in a while, but that's pretty awesome. Then he indirectly multiplies food for a widow. Then he raises the widow's son from the dead. So this guy is like, he's awesome. Then he tells Obadiah, he says, go tell Ahab, behold, Elijah is here. That's like Danny walking up to the White House and saying, standing at the door saying, behold, Danny Heiss is here. Which he'd probably never get anywhere close to the front doors. He probably wouldn't get anywhere close, but that's kind of what that's like. Then he defeats the prophets of Baal by calling down fire from heaven to burn up the sacrifice. Holy, wow. That is amazing. If you guys have not read that story, I'm going to kind of give you a summary, but there's 450 prophets of Baal, and they both have a sacrifice, and they're both trying to get their gods to consume the sacrifice, so they can't use any external fire or sparks or anything to light the sacrifice. They're just focused on their particular god lighting the sacrifice. And so the 450 prophets, they sit there for a long time, for hours, and they're praying and they're calling. And then Elijah must have been just so confident because he starts to mock them. And he was like, well, maybe your God is on the toilet. That's right. Or, yeah, he actually said it. Maybe he's on the toilet. And so there's these 450 guys who are cutting themselves. They're all bleeding. And you know it's got to be a bad day if you're bleeding and then the person next to you is mocking you at the same time. But he's just sitting there mocking them. And he's like, well, maybe he took a nap. Maybe you need to wake him up. Or maybe he's gone on an adventure. Or maybe he's taken a sabbatical. And so the fire consumes. Elijah gets up there. You know, he says a little prayer. And then all of a sudden this fire comes down from heaven. And actually it says the fire licked up the water. So if you can imagine fire drinking water, that'd be pretty awesome. So the fire consumes this altar. And so everyone knew that Elijah's God was the God. And then he sees the 450 prophets of Baal and he killed them, which was customary in the time. If you had a false prophet, you stoned them to death or you killed them. So that's just kind of how it was. Then we get to this part. 1 Kings 19, verse 1 through 4. You guys ready? Is everyone there? Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. So Jezebel says, Elijah, you are dead. You are a dead man walking. And in the very next verse, then he was afraid. So all of these things that he had done, the drought, raising the widow's son from the dead, the sacrifice, and before this also, the drought ended and rain came right before he got the message when he confronted Ahab. And so it says that he was afraid. And he rose and he ran for his life and came to Beersheba. Beersheba, from the research that I've done, was 100 miles south of where he was. So he just ran and he kept running. 100 miles away. And so this man who had done all of these great things, he was afraid. He was scared. And so he ran, and he kept running until he was 100 miles away. And that's what I'm talking about when I say that the enemy tries to give us amnesia and tries to make us forget who we are. Even this man, even he got scared and ran away. Even he forgot who he was for a little bit. So it says he was afraid. He went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and he left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And then he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." So Elijah throws himself a pity party. So he's got his pity party in full force, and everybody's invited to this particular pity party. And that's a lot of what we do sometimes. It's like we get into a bad situation, we forget who we are, we do something bad, then all of a sudden it's pity party time. We throw ourselves this big pity party, and then someone has to come in and bring us out of it. And so in 1 Kings 19, verse 11, and he said, "Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passes by, and a great strong wind tore the mountains and broke into pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the sound, and after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, and he went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" So you know that you have done something wrong when God asks you why you're here. You've done something really wrong. Did the same thing to Adam in the garden. He said, "Adam, where are you? Why have you hid yourself from me?" So you know you've done something pretty bad if God's asking you what you're doing. And so he said, "I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, throw down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." So this brings me to another thing that I think is our mentality. Elijah's mentality was completely changed by one sentence from Jezebel. The only thing she had to do was threaten to kill him, and then he was scared. His mentality completely changed. I guess there was something that he was expecting that didn't happen with Jezebel, and so his mentality was completely changed. I believe that God had to show his power to Elijah in the wind and the earthquake and the fire in order for that to kind of change his mentality. Like, there was a show of God's power, and I think that that was kind of to reorient Elijah and say, all right, you know, with all those things, the wind, the earthquake, and the fire, I think God was saying, hey, you know, creator of the universe here, what are you doing? I had your back. I had your back. What are you doing? And so our mentality is very powerful, and it determines exactly who we are. Everything, like most the Bible itself, most of the Bible has to do with the heart or spirit and the mind. And so all of your battles are going to take place up here. There's nowhere else. Any problems or issues you have with other people, any problems or issues, period, it's all up here first. It happens up here, and then it happens through action. So our mentality is one of the things that we really need to be aware of, and we really need to try to change, especially when we have issues in that particular area. To be leaders, I'm going to use an example. You guys remember Christian Ashworth, right? Yeah. He's gone. He left us. He left us here in Martinsville to go on. Oh, nice. Yeah, he got promoted. So Christian's doing well. We got to see him about a month or two ago, but he actually moved to Roanoke. But the one of the first times, probably like 2 or 3 years after I'd known Christian, I took him to meet my parents, not in the I wanted him to be my wife type of way, but he just had, huh? Oh, it's a, yeah. But he had never met my parents. So I took him to go see my parents, and he just kept looking at me with this really weird look on his face, and I didn't know what he was. I was like, you know, what's wrong with you today? Like, there's something really wrong with you. And so we left. He met my parents. You know, we sat down. We ate dinner and everything. Everything was fine, and we left. And he was in the car. He was like, for the first 5 minutes, I thought you were playing a joke on me. He was like, there is no way this is your family. There is no way. And any of you guys that have met my family, we're completely different, me versus my family. But he was like, there is no way that was your family. He was like, I thought you were seriously joking with me for like the first 5 minutes. And I kept giving you this look for the first 5 minutes. And he said, why? He said, how did you come from that? And I was like, well, that's the, I guess I just have a different mentality from my parents and my family. Yeah, my grandmother, she was awesome, though. I could go on about this, and with mentalities and things like that, you could make a 21-part message that involves everything. It involves so many different things and aspects. I'm just kind of giving a general overview. But the last point that I wanted to make is that in order to be a leader in Martinsville or in the area, we have to understand the mentalities that we're up against. We have to be aware of the mentalities of the city. And so there's a lot of mentalities that are out there. A lot in this particular area is entitlement. People feel very entitled. There's victim mentalities everywhere. Everybody's a victim. And there are so many different of these mentalities, and we have to be aware of those because we have to pray through them. And I think that being aware of these mentalities is going to make a difference for us, because we're going to be able to pray through these things. And so that is the end of my message. This is the first message that I've had in a long time. The last time was my testimony, but.
Yeah, Mary Ann's going to come up in a minute. Can you get Elizabeth and bring her? I don't know where she went. Yeah, here's Elizabeth.
Kenny, when you were talking about going out, what was it you were talking about, going out in the community? Behind enemy lines, yeah. I saw something, it just came to me, and, you know, I think it's the Greeks. I think it might have been Alexander the Great, one of them, and came up with this new, or maybe it was the Romans. They came up with something called the phalanx, phalanx. It was a military formation with which they were able, there was one that they were able to go and fight the enemy without getting injured. And what it was, they all stood like in a square, kind of. And they had these long shields, and they would put the shields in front of them. The people in the front would have their shields in front. The people on the sides would have their shields on the sides. And so, therefore, nobody could get to them. Okay, they were all inside this wall of shields. And then they would march out to the battle with these shields all around them. Am I saying this right, Stephen? You're not. And it kind of revolutionized warfare at that time, because the whole group could go out there and they could fight without getting mowed down. Well, anyway, I just saw the Lord saying that that's not the way He wants us to do it. Okay, we're not supposed to go out, be out in the community, huddled inside a wall of defensive shields, like we're scared that something out there is going to hurt us or something. You know what I mean? You know, that's not what He wants us to be, inside this wall of shields when we go out. I mean, the Lord's going to, if there's anything, the Lord will protect us, okay? I mean, I think we're a lot more scared of stuff that might happen to us than actually needs to be. I think we get a little paranoid over nothing sometimes. You know, no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, okay? You know, I mean, somebody said one time they didn't want to pray for someone who was demonized because they didn't want the demon to come on them. Well, a demon's not going to come on you because no weapon formed against you is going to prosper. Amen. Lord sends you out to do battle. He's not going to let the demon come on you. Amen. But you should pray before you go out and witness and do stuff like that. But anyway, so we're not supposed to be huddled inside this shield and just go out every now and then, you know, when we're, you know, protected. And we're not supposed to be inside a castle with a moat and a drawbridge that we can pull up whenever some strangers come by that we don't know. Or like the hillbillies, when you see a car coming up, get the guns out and go out there and meet them with the guns. Say, who is there? Who's out there? And send the dogs out at them. No, we're not supposed to be that way. Okay, we're supposed to be open. The Lord's going to take care of, you know, don't worry about yourself. We're supposed to go out there and just be who we are. You know, just be ourselves. Don't be afraid. Just get out there and talk to people, minister to people. You know, people are hungry. They want someone to be real with them about the Lord. They want somebody to be brave and talk to them. Amen. That's all.